Mike Bailey, a pioneer of the Gulf Coast wine scene and award-winning food entrepreneur.
I know a lot of you wonder what to do with your moon pies. Well, I've got some wine suggestions for you. Lemon moon pies, Sauvignon Blanc, Chenin Blanc, or Pinot Grigio.
Stuart Reb Donald, acclaimed food and travel writer and world-class chef.
I was chef de casserole. I made the casseroles in the frozen food department.
For more than a decade, they've combined their expertise to answer your questions and introduce you to the culinary movers and shakers you want or ought to know. Four-time Taste Award finalists, 13-time Nappy Award losers. They are the dynamic duo of dining.
Drop, keep a screaming for more.
Dragon Mike and Stu on FM Talk 106.5.
Wise boy, ody, dragon wine. Wise boy, ody, dragon wine.
All righty. Here, welcome to the Sippin' Chew Show on this fine Sunday morning of overcast. And just as soon as I say that, the sun pops out.
Well, so anyway, it's because it's bringing the cool weather with
it. It's bringing the cool weather with it. Kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Kind of looking forward to
it. I burned my creosote log last week.
Yeah?
My chimney sweep log.
Mm-hmm.
Just on a cool night, because it doesn't put off a whole lot of heat, but it clears your chimney out so that you don't have to pay somebody to stick a London street urchin down it to clean it. And so I'm ready to go.
Okay. Yeah. Look at you.
I.e. a chimney sweep.
Yes. I don't even.
That's funny.
Know if they use it. Do people use them anymore? I don't know. Well, with all the technology
Yeah. You do need to get it take care of. The creosote that's in pine sticks to the inside of the chimney fluke.
And the brick. And the brick porous brick.
Yep. And it will catch on fire.
Right. More than that, I witnessed when I was young, our neighbors had a chimney that they built, and they never cleaned it. One night about 2 a.m., heard this like a sonic boom, woke up the whole town, because I'm from a very small town, but it woke up everybody.
All five of you?
No, there's 28. But, and actually, at that point, there was, I think, 210, maybe that's in, including cats and dogs. Sure. But either way, we all woke up and we witnessed brick everywhere.
Wow.
And the hole in the wall, they were gone.
And since we're getting into the cool weather again, folks, if we're expecting snow or rain below 40 degrees, pack your denim jeans away and bring them out in the summertime. They're the worst possible thing you could wear in that kind of condition. You will learn how quickly hypothermia will kill you.
Well,
no cotton socks.
It's all cotton, yeah.
Yep, no cotton.
It soaks in the water.
Well, and drains the heat from your body, whereas wool socks, when they get wet, they still insulate and keep you warm.
But they're so dadgum scratchy. I hate wool.
I do too. Ugh. It looks good.
Yes, it does. You got to wear something underneath it, though. Yeah. Just, you know, like a t-shirt.
Well, I'm just talking about socks, wool socks.
Yeah, I'm talking wool, period.
What you can do, they used to, hikers in the 90s, I don't see anyone doing this now, would buy these little, you used a two-sock system.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one was just really thin nylon, like thinner than a dress sock.
Mm-hmm.
You put that in there, and then your wool sock, and what it did was it kept you from getting blisters. So you could do something like that, too.
Problem
just put
is
a pair of dress
socks.
They
tend to slide around a little bit.
Yeah, that's why I always wore dress socks.
Yeah.
So they did the same thing.
Yeah.
And prevented the blisters.
Because
the blisters are caused from rubbing. You don't wear your hiking boots every day.
Some people do. Some people wear sweatshirts every day and it's 100 degrees. But
there are people who wear hiking boots every day. They don't wear their hiking boots every day. They're just wearing hiking boots. It doesn't matter if you wear them every day. If you hike 10 miles in them, you're going to get blisters.
Yeah.
So that's a way to alleviate it.
So food time. Now you're getting cold. Chili? I like chili when it starts to get chilly.
Yep, and gumbo.
Gumbo. I know you guys are good on
gumbo. I like swamp soup. I like gumbo.
What's the difference between swamp soup and gumbo?
Totally different.
Totally different.
Well, obviously the name says that. That's why I'm
asking. Swamp soup's got mustards or collards, mainly collards in there. And Fish River Grill is notorious for their swamp soup.
Go to a South Alabama game or the Senior Bowl tailgating, and everybody's got swamp soup.
Makes sense.
It's hearty.
Considering the place was built on a swamp.
Yep.
Hardy, hardy. It really is.
No, they maintain a swamp on their campus for the marine biology and biology students.
Well, all of that out there was,
for the most part. Where we're sitting right now was some serious swamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Most of Mobile was.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, especially let's drain that swamp.
Especially
why
this
would you
area.
Want a swamp? No, this area was called Rag Swamp.
Yeah.
W-R-A-G.
Right over here, if you go up Pleasant Valley in that area, you can see at the bottom, where it bottoms out here on Mont Lamar, houses have sunk.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new houses. Well, they're not new now, but when they were built, they've started sinking. And just couldn't... It was just too much water.
In hindsight, draining swamps is about as stupid as building dams. They're both really, really bad ideas. Now, we can't remove all the dams in the U.S., but we should if we could. They have done far more damage than the good that has come from them. Especially, I mean, salmon. We love salmon, except for those who don't. But you dam up the rivers, we don't have salmon anymore.
They can't swim.
Yeah, they can't get up there. So they've done things. They built steps on the sides of dams and stuff like that. And I've always said, progress cannot work without conservation. Conservation won't work without progress. But you can't have one or the other. They have to work together. Subaru is a fine example of that, the way that corporation operates. They build the best cars in the world. Nobody, Mercedes is not as good as a Subaru. Won't last as long. BMW won't touch them. They also have practices that make it so that their industry does less damage than other people in the same industry. It's a great example to follow. Progress and conservation have to work together.
You need a balance in everything.
Yeah. Right. And the people that ignore one or the other are the worst people. You can't be all environment all the time. And you can't be all progress all the time. You're the bad guy if you are.
Right.
Everything falls in the middle, like you're saying. It's just like extreme right politically, extreme left politically, you're both the bad guys. You're both wrong. It's the people in the middle that have common sense. Because any decision that you make that you let emotion figure into that decision will eventually blow up in your face.
Well, that's the same with pizza on you know, with pineapple.
Yeah.
It's just an emotional decision. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. That's my emotional decision. I like it.
I like pineapple on pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't care for anchovies.
No. I don't understand the fish thing, but hey, there are those that do it. Yeah, it's up to you.
You eat anchovies all the time.
I know I do.
Yep, in the form of Caesar dressing.
I know it.
Really? That is the main flavor ingredient in a real Caesar dressing.
That's just the oil, though, right?
No. It's the anchovy paste where they grind it into a little thing. There are some places where they
see their little eyes looking up at me. Going,
I've seen some restaurants, I know, where they make it right there in front of you.
That is the only true Caesar salad, by the way. It has to be made tableside to be a really classic Caesar.
And they throw the little anchovies down, they chop it up, and then they start adding all the other ingredients.
Cioppino, the soup that you love, that John Gibson makes.
Oh, my God.
The first thing you do when making cioppino is add olive oil and one anchovy into it, and it's called melting the anchovy. What you're doing is stirring it into the oil, and it just completely disappears into it and gives a good seafood base to what you're doing, because then you're going to build it up with seafood stock, three kinds of fish, which can also be like shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a proper cioppino, there has to be three kinds of fish in it.
Same, again, a balance.
A seafood stock, a tomato base added to it. It's not a tomatoey soup, but you could definitely tell there's tomato.
I would imagine there's so much flavor in a sardine, not sardine, but anchovy, because it's so condensed. That's why it gives such a base.
And in some countries, and I would like to find a bag of this, they will like dry them with salt, and you just eat the whole anchovy like a chip.
I've heard of that, yeah.
I would love to try, because that would be healthy as all get out.
My dad used to love to get sardines in the can of crackers.
I love the sardines. The ones in the oil with the hot pepper.
Yeah, ooh,
my dad was a sardine. He was a potted meat, Vienna sausage.
You mentioned mincemeat last week. My dad
which is not meat.
But my dad loves some mincemeat pie, boy. Oof. Especially this time of year with Christmas.
We were talking about the name being mincemeat. Well, there's usually also nuts in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
The part of a nut that you eat is called the meat.
Really? Oh, because it's the meat of the shell of the nut.
Right.
Yeah.
Chicken is not meat. Nuts are. Isn't that nuts?
251-343-0106 is the call and text in line. When you come back, we're going to talk about what day it is.
Sunday.
Sunday?
Uh-oh, I don't like juice. Chicken, chicken, ice cream, fish. I like ice cream. What's this? This is juice. This is juice.
Mike Bailey, Stuart Reb Donald. Devoted to the complete gastronomic experience.
I want a big butter and egg man.
Mike and Stu on FM Talk 106.5.
Alrighty, we're back. Hey.
Hey.
Remember the debate a few years ago with the contest going on between, it wasn't really a contest, it just kind of happened accidentally, with the Chick-fil-A fried chicken sandwich and the
Popeye's
fried chicken sandwich, and they were going back
sign
and forth
wars.
Battling. Yeah. Had sign wars. It became famous on Airport Boulevard. Yeah. And then...
that was Moe's. Well, barbecue was and Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A, yeah. But it was going... Because Popeye's is the bottom of the hill on the airport, and Chick-fil-A's the top of the hill there at Regency. But today is National Fried Chicken Sandwich Day. And I put the question out there, you know, which is your favorite?
That's an easy question.
And everybody says, one person goes, it's Chick-fil-A except on Sundays. And I thought that was
good. Now, Chick-fil-A's not even a contestant in the best chicken sandwich.
I think it's Popeye's. I just love Popeye's.
It's Squid Ink.
What?
You haven't had the Mop Pound
hot chicken? I haven't had that one yet.
It's been on the menu for about 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have fried chicken thigh, Mike.
Ooh.
That immediate, just because it's thigh means it's better than anything made
chicken.
You're
right about that. You're right about that.
But yeah, Popeye's is the best chicken breast, fried chicken breast sandwich. Mm-hmm. Out there. Second best chicken sandwich, Mediterranean sandwich.
There you go.
It's not fried. That's that Red Rooster, where it's the shawarma chicken, Kaneka, and their harissa hot sauce. Oh, that's good.
Wow. Haven't had that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That sounds good.
Well, I worked there for a while helping Vlad out. Speaking of, Vlad's cousin, Andre Maldovano, who is the first franchisee in Mediterranean Sandwich Company history in Fairhope, his birthday today.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Andre's a cool kid. I got a funny joke for you, but I can't tell it on air.
Okay. You'll have to tell me another time.
Y'all will love it.
By the way, David Dumble says, shout out to Stu on his gumbo history overview on YouTube, as well as the Eastern Shore Kiwanis and Danny Calametti on yesterday, Best of the Bay Gumbo Cook-Off. Another delicious event.
I missed that.
Some impressive local gumbos. Thanks to Danny, he sampled around 45 gumbos.
Ooh.
A personal best for himself. Way to go, David.
I've done 42. He beats me.
Now, when I've judged there in the past, it's we've sampled maybe up to 10 or 12 each table.
Wow.
Because we had three or four teams, but we did not try each other's. You know, you get five, six, eight, 10 over here, depending on how many entries. They had a lot of entries yesterday. So, that's crazy. Yeah. That's good.
And I'm glad that David brought up the brief history of gumbo that I did recently. The episode of Delta Safari that hits tomorrow night is going to be a history of Gulf Coast favorite dishes.
Okay.
So it's going to be gumbo, jambalaya, etouffee, fried crab claws. We're going to look into a real quick history in all of those
Swamp suit?
No, that's probably going to be volume 2 because there's so many things here in the South on the Gulf Coast that I think this was going to have 6 or 7 dishes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't even scratched the surface on what we're used to, like stuffed flounder, smoked tuna dip, these things that are so common here on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
So this will be volume 1.
So you said a chicken sandwich. Derek said Fast Times in Daphne used to be the best chicken breast sandwich.
I bet.
Because
their
tall.
Fried chicken was
it
killer.
The sandwich or the biscuit?
6 inches Derek? Tall and... I'm thinking, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
That's layered.
Now, I've had their fried chicken biscuit
hmm.
at Fast Time and Daphne.
Mm-hmm.
that was killer. I used to get one on my way to the radio station when we were on at 8, and I'd swing in, get right. one, and shoot on over to the
See,
station.
See, now you could do that. Well, you can't do that now. I'm just
well, you know how I always say here. Bojangles is the poor man's Popeyes? Mm-hmm. They have a fried chicken sandwich.
I've never good, had Bojangles.
Good, spicy piece of chicken breast, mm-hmm. mayonnaise, and a hamburger bun.
I think That's I want to try the...
That's why it does not compete with the Popeyes. The
I
chicken
want to try
is
the thigh.
Yeah, it's squid ink.
No pickle, though, man. Come on. You got yeah. a pickle in there.
Oh, well yeah, the Bojangles does.
Wednesday, I'm going to be right around the corner from there Wednesday night. Yeah. I may go swing in there and grab me one.
Yep, with the Mobile Hot Town, Mobile Hot Fries.
Now, listen.
Oh, those are
I'm
good.
Getting where I can't take the heat anymore, okay?
Well, this is basically Nashville hot. It is going to be hot,
I just
but it's also going to be sweet, and you're not going to be able to stop eating it. I'll tell you, that Nashville hot, which Pete is calling Mob Town Hot here in Mobile, a very similar recipe. It may be the exact same recipe. I don't know, but it's very similar. That stuff's addictive. The brown sugar, the smoked paprika, and the cayenne is just like crack.
I am starting to like smoked paprika.
Oh, I love smoked paprika.
So
it's like Chipotle without the heat.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, got some anniversaries here. We had one birthday. Gurus over in Robertsdale, November 19th, they're celebrating their 15-year anniversary. I've eaten there. Great hamburger. Great.
Yep.
I know the owner used to listen to the show. I don't know if he still does.
Yeah.
But shout out to them. 15-year anniversary. That says a lot. That says a lot, especially in the economies today. Heroes, our buddy David Rass downtown. Yep. Heroes, 27 years.
Wow.
Heroes has been in business. And kind of in our backyard over in D'Iberville, Mississippi, is Doris's Hot Tamales. They even named the street after her.
Really?
The Iberville throws a party. They have Doris Hot Tamale Day.
I don't remember that.
It's in November every year. And 49 years, it's got a historical marker there. It's walk up to the window. You can eat on the benches out front. Or you know, you just walk up, get it, take it with you. But I've got a dozen one time, and I split them with some friends. And they're pretty dang good. Hard to catch, when they sell out, they're out. They close down and go home for the day.
Okay. You ever made tamales?
I have not, but I've watched them.
I have. It is a labor-intensive task. Yeah. And like my buddy Jerry, when I was in Nashville, a phenomenal bass player, his mother and his father both came to America from Mexico. So he was first generation. And I asked him one time, what is Christmas like? He goes, oh, dude. My abuela, my mother, and my sister spent like 3 days making tamales. We got cheese tamales, we got pork tamales, we got chicken tamales. We'll have about 1,000.
Wow.
1,000 tamales. And he said, at midnight on Christmas Eve, we go to Mass. We come back about 2 o'clock in the morning, we break out the tequila, eat all of the tamales. He said, then we wake up at 6 in the morning, we have like a white people Christmas. He said, you know, the big bird and the dressing and stuff.
There you go.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you eat even after 1,000? Well, of course, how many's in the family?
Yeah, exactly. This is a lot. A big Latino family.
Well, I've got a number of Latino families in my neighborhood. I'm going to ride around at midnight to see if I see anybody going
on. Get the lights on, knock on the door.
Honestly, Jerry used to tell me about these street parties that they threw when he was at home. And he lived on a street where his house was in the city of Port Hueneme, but the house across the street was in Oxnard.
Mm-hmm.
So same little area. He said they'd park trucks across the street on each end, blocking the road off, and the whole community would just have a party at somebody's backyard.
That sounds fun.
Music playing everywhere, dancing.
Sounds fun.
And he said the goal was you wanted to have enough food on hand that everybody ate until they were on the verge of puking and took home enough to eat for 2 more days.
That didn't take long for me on Thanksgiving morning. It was like, I'm done, you know, but the snacks and 25,000, you know.
Oh, this was just a monthly block party.
Oh, wow.
And they would take turns, one of them hosting it.
I'm going to tell you, talking about parties, Thursday night I was at the Piggly Wiggly at Fairhope. They had their Taste of L.A. Uh-huh. That
Lower
place
Alabama.
Was packed. packed, sampling wine, beer, soft drinks, Billy's bacon. He was doing pork belly that night. Gumbos, barbecue sauces, seafood. That one's gone, but when the one on University Boulevard comes around, ooh, folks, you need to go. That thing is Taste of L.A. Oh,
Taste of L.A.
And let me tell you what, the one in Fairhope's huge, the one in Foley's huge, but the one on Airport Boulevard, on the University Airport, gigantamous.
Put that up here.
And it's a social event. You just run into people you hadn't maybe seen in a long time, and you get to eat and drink free. And, you know, it's bite-sized stuff. Scott Gonzalez was there sampling three drinks. And that's what I love about what that place has done. That place has incorporated a lot of small mom-and-pop businesses and give them a space in the store to work out of. And Neiman's is in there, you know.
What if they need a mac and cheese shop?
Hey, go talk to them.
251-343-0106. When we come back, we'll be talking to Danny Calametti about what's going on.
I hope.
Make me happy.
Make me happy.
Make me feel fine.
Make me feel fine.
For more than a decade, Sip and Chew with Mike and Stu on FM Talk 106.5.
I don't smoke, I don't shoot.
And the reason why is a text. Listener said, where can you watch the history of gumbo? I'm assuming that's the Delta Safari thing that you're doing.
Yeah. It's one of my shorts on YouTube and TikTok.
Okay.
But tomorrow night at 10 o'clock, it will be compiled into a large video with several other ones. And that's just at Delta Safari Show on YouTube.
Okay. There you go.
All right. And so, we do have somebody on the phone, right?
Yeah, we do. Somebody.
Danny Calametti, one of the famous Calametti brothers. Danny, what's going on, buddy?
I wandered in, man. We're loading out here for our Bourbon by the Bay event at the Maritime Museum. It's going to be a nice affair. There's still tickets available. You can still get some walk up. General admission tickets are $100, and we got a whole slew of bourbon and whiskey purveyors setting up. We got some nice food being provided by Neiman's. We got some music going to be on. So it's a fundraiser for the Coastal Alabama Partnership, which folks may not be aware, but that's a coalition of the civic organizations, government agencies, just interested businesses and individuals who are really focused on helping perpetuate and improve the life that we love here throughout Mobile and Baldwin County. So it's a great organization, and that's what this fundraiser is all about. But that's one of the things we got going on, and I am I don't think we're serving any gumbo today, which is okay with me because I'm kind of gumboed out after my last two weekends.
I bet you are.
But it's not, you know, I could sit back down another bowl of gumbo, so it works out okay.
I think it's time for some red beans and rice.
Well, there is that too. That's coming from me next week. So I didn't report back on Coastal's gumbo. We had 20 contestants over there at Coastal in Orange Beach, and I really put my judges through the ringer. So I only had one table of judges. So those 20 samples were tasted by five judges, but they're professionals. They were professionals. They've done this before, and they came up with a winner. Pelican Grill won that. Now that wasn't a golden ticket event, but it was for fun and competition. And there were some good gumbos over there. So this is the second year they've done it over there, and it's just a great turnout. They do a great job over there with it. Had a good crowd, and they raised some funds for our culinary education program. So that was their fundraiser. The good thing about this year is last year it conflicted with the Fairhope Best of the Bay. So
right.
I did Coastal, and I pawned off Best of the Bay onto a buddy of mine. So I was able to do both this year. And we had 28 teams competing in Fairhope. It was just, there was some good gumbo out there. So they give away two. They give away, they recognize the best in the restaurant category and in the community category. The community category, the Trim Guy won. And then what they end up doing, well, on the, you guys are not going to be able to go find him, I don't think, unless you know him and get him to cook you some gumbo. But the three restaurant winners were Local, was third place. Hattie's Soul Food was second place, and this is the they played second 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
and the winner in the restaurant category was the Pearl, and the Pearl has won before. So they serve a good old Louisiana gumbo with a doublet of a good helping of potato salad right dab in the middle of it. So they won
Gula style,
and then the overall winner was a Trim Guy, so they won the golden ticket for World Food Championship. So as soon as we get WFC haven't confirmed the dates yet for this next year. It'll still be in Indy, but they haven't confirmed the date. So as soon as they confirm the dates, we'll get him lined up and look at having a representative from Fairhope Best of the Bay Gumbo up there yet. So it was a good day, gorgeous day. I will tell you that afterwards I got out and sampled. And I didn't do a whole lot of sampling for the judges. I was too busy working on points and all that. But I want to give a shout out to the Gambinos. That was some good tasting gumbo that I had. It's not fair because it didn't taste a lot of the other gumbos. But I do want to. I mean, he has a long roux process that he works on, and his gumbo was delicious. So I do want to give him a shout out.
Yeah, I saw him. He was dishing out lasagna the night at the Pig.
Yeah, I didn't see him at the Pig, but he does a lot of different work. I'll also give, since I'm shouting out to folks, Scott Gonzalez was over there working as well. He picks up some gumbo for somebody, so another guy that we ran into. So it's just a good crowd over there. And the Kiwanis is a great organization. Yeah. It's a fundraiser for them. They do a lot of great things, and they attract a lot of good folks to that. So yeah, so good time was had by all.
I was. Man,
and the good thing about I was somebody had offered me, he was talking to me about taking a trip to Nashville and wanted to go up for a couple of days in Nashville. And it was the latter part of November before Thanksgiving. I was looking at my calendar and I didn't have any scheduled. And I went, well, no, wait a minute, I'm gonna keep it that way and not schedule it. My calendar has been a zoo of late, so I'm just gonna kick back and wait for Thanksgiving and be glad when football season is over and. If we can focus on basketball, at least on my
part. Amen.
So, it was a good game last night, but yesterday, I wasn't really surprised at how it ended. I was just waiting for that shoe to fall. But anyway, it was at least better than the Kentucky game. God, that was awful. But
yeah.
But anyway,
mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
All right, I am gonna make me some red beans. I make my red beans and rice with ham. I love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you use a nice big ham bone and oh yeah, I
yeah,
love it.
Absolutely.
And, wait a minute, I've had beans and rice, but never red beans and rice. I guess that would make sense. Not really.
Yeah,
a lot of times in New Orleans, in Louisiana, you're going to find tasso in the red beans and rice and in everything they do there, which is this smoked fat, pork fat.
Okay.
David Hubble so can tell you more accurately. What tasso is, but it is a smoked fat from pig.
It's in a lot of stuff. Just get a hip shank and with a lot of meat fat still on it and just throw it in there.
Yeah. It's just the way you would cook anything.
I never thought about putting that with rice.
Speaking of Hubble, I made him work all day yesterday. I had him survey all the gumbo folks and talk to them about gumbo and stuff. So he had a working day yesterday at the Fairhope Gumbo.
That was a tough job.
You know, I think he kind of enjoys that.
I was going to say, it sounded like rough work to me. I don't know if I can handle it.
Well, he does like to talk gumbo, so.
Oh, yeah.
So you got anything coming up in a couple of weeks, in the next week or so, or what?
I actually don't. I'm actually going to take a break for a little bit. So, I may find something other to call in to talk about. But,
Nothing for Thanksgiving, huh?
I don't have any events. There's some senior bowl stuff going on. We got a few things going on senior bowl. I got a cool event that we're working on with Panini Pete for senior bowl. So that's going to be cool. And Panini Pete and Panini. Panini Pete and Panini's sports marketing. So we're gonna blow out something ahead of time, but I got to get all my details worked out first. So
right,
that's
we'll
coming
keep,
up.
Keep our ears open.
Yeah, my calendar for February, for January and February is packed, and that's not even thinking about Mardi Gras. So,
but we'll make sure we put everything on the podcast, and that way they can link to you.
That'll work. That'll work. All right, guys, I got to get back to my Bourbon by the Bay setup. The longer I sit out here, the more stuff they put on my table to do. So,
as long as it's bourbon, that's okay.
Well, that's bourbon part of it too. Yeah, there you go.
Enjoy.
All right. Maybe I'll see you guys out here this afternoon.
See you soon.
Yeah. All right, we'll do.
Well, it was always fun visiting with Danny Calametti.
Always. I didn't want to ask this question yet, but it's crossed my mind because I used to compete in gumbo competitions, and I mean, I did many for year after year after year, and then it just got expensive.
Yep.
And this is before prices today that you have today.
Well, this is an issue. It's why I don't compete anymore. Mm-hmm. It's because all these competitions want you to, A, donate your time.
Mm-hmm.
B, donate your product. And now the big one that really, really puts a burr under my saddle is now they want you to pay $500 for the honor to do all of that.
Well,
that's your job to raise that money, not mine. I'm already donating my time and my product.
I don't know how.
Entry fees should not exist.
I don't know how it is handled now. I know they would want us to sell tickets.
Which is their job.
We pay up front, and then you sell those tickets they give you, and then you got your money back. You recoup your money.
And I'm not okay with that arrangement. And your job is to sell tickets. I'm a competitor. It's
but
not my job.
They would give you donate some of the seafood.
Yeah.
But I was still spending $550, $700 out of my pocket just for the product itself. Yeah.
And the best you can hope for if you win is to break even. Because the prize is never
Dolphin Island was a huge one. Dolphin Island was a big event.
But what was the fee there? Like $25, $50 to join it?
Yeah,
not the $500, $300
that
we're seeing today. Those are ridiculous.
You still had to sell 10 tickets.
Yeah.
And that, which was no problem. I just sent Brandon out to the road. His people were coming in, and they got them cheaper from him than they were paying at the gate. So I always save my tickets that day, and he'd go out there, boom.
Plus, we're both big fans of child labor.
Yeah.
Wow.
He loved it.
I can't say that I didn't do that when I was
For those that are upset, your children are not subject to child labor laws when you're the one having them do that. That's true. You're their parent.
But even the smaller gumbo competitions that I got involved in, and competed in, it was still $200 or more out of my pocket. And those were some that didn't even donate. You know, they didn't even kick in 5 pounds of shrimp or whatever.
I was about to ask, don't you go out and get donations of your ingredients?
You try.
Yeah.
Now, Mike and I did a fundraiser for Weeks Bay a couple of years ago, and they provided me with 70 pounds of Gulf shrimp.
Wow.
To make mac and cheese with.
Nice.
I needed about 7 pounds for everything I did, and I just had shrimp in my freezer for a while. Gave some to some needy families.
Yeah.
Helped them out, because 5 pounds of already peeled shrimp.
Wow.
That'll go a long way for a family in need.
Yo.
Oh, that was 5 gallons of gumbo for me.
Yeah, I didn't do gumbo.
I had to do enough roux. I'd get there at 4 a.m. and start frying bacon to start my roux, and anyway.
Yeah, 251-343-0106.
It was fun anyway. It was a good cause, but it's fun.
My carnivorous habits made it nearly 7 days. Losing weight without speed eating sunflower seeds. Drinking lots of carrot juice and soaking up a raisin.
They are the dynamic duo of dining. Sip and Chew with Mike and Stu. Call 343-0106. Now back to Mike and Stu.
That's us. We're Mike and Stu.
Anyway. I had a good time with Gene Fox and everybody else down there on Dolphin Island at the Gumbo Cook-Offs. It's just so many competitions out there now.
Yeah. Well, I never competed on Dolphin Island.
You were always a judge.
I was a demonstration chef.
There's that too.
Yeah, I did cooking demos down there, and what I would do is try and expand people's mind as to what gumbo could be. One of them that we did that went off really well was the deconstructed gumbo.
Deconstructed.
So you get gumbo. A bowl. There's a scoop of rice in it. Then we made basically the sauce that etouffee is, seafood gravy. I would puree onions, you know, Trinity, get them real small, and just make a roux, cook those into it, and add seafood stock to it with the roux, thicken it up nicely. Then we would pour that over the rice, and then you would get one grilled shrimp, one boiled crawfish, one fried oyster, one fried crab claw, and then some fried okra sprinkled on top. And then in a setting like that where people who, I don't like oysters, well, you have
take
two shrimp.
Off.
You have no, you have two shrimp. That saves oysters for me because I love fried oysters. I'd rather eat fried oysters than fried shrimp any day.
Really? Well,
but they're so expensive.
Me and judging a gumbo competition over on Spring Hill Avenue with Danny Liffert and a couple other people. And our buddy Matt from Lodi Beer Garden, he did a gumbo.
Mr. Golden.
Huh?
Mr. Golden.
Yeah. He did a gumbo that he was doing for his up-and-coming new restaurant.
Yeah.
And he had pickled onions and pickled okra and all that in. You talking about great.
Say, that sounds good.
You talking about it was delicious. I said, I would order this.
Yeah.
I really would.
By the way, David Hubble says, oh, by the way, Mike, congratulations on the win yesterday, at least. I don't have to worry about BK anymore. Who is BK?
Brian what Kelly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, David.
A man that was so
I hear Coach O's coming back.
Do what?
I hear Coach O's coming back.
Coach O.
No, Coach O says he wants the job back, and they went, yeah, I'm sure you did.
He must be running out of money.
On this,
and girls.
And girl money. He's running out of girls and money.
Yeah, they said that last year he was at LSU. He didn't really coach at practice.
You know, it's
he
funny
had
how
a different 20-year-old girlfriend out there every day.
It's funny how that works. You run out of money, and all of a sudden you don't have any girls.
They kind of go hand in hand, like your money in their hand.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway.
So on the TikTok release that I did on that brief history of gumbo, you know, I have several pictures of different kinds of gumbo that are through the video that are helped to give you visual realizations. The first one had tomatoes in it. And first comment was, that's not traditional gumbo. Yes, it is. New Orleans hates tomatoes and gumbo. But you didn't invent the soup, y'all. Gumbo was invented a continent away hundreds of years before New Orleans ever existed. That your New Orleans gumbo is just one example of gumbo.
But
I prefer Mobile.
One's Creole, one's Cajun. One's got tomatoes, one doesn't. Yeah. And I was told, too, that the one without the tomatoes was a lot due to economics. Tomatoes didn't grow well there.
Due to economics, wasn't it?
Tomatoes didn't grow there, and they didn't have access to them. And I guess it was the swamps.
Well,
according to swamps would be everything was economic. They just kind of threw everything in.
You make it with your local ingredients. Real gumbo has no seafood in it. No sausage, no roux. That's real gumbo. It comes from Africa. The one thing that it has in it that we're used to is okra, because that's what it means. Kai gumbo.
Yep.
I believe. But New Orleanians, and I mentioned this on a bunch of dishes, they think that, first off, that there's a hard and fast rule to all of these dishes. There aren't. That's idiotic. Your grandmother didn't cook like that. No matter how much you want to tell people, my grandmother never put tomatoes in gumbo. She did if they were in season and she had them on hand. But but New Orleanians, they get so territorial about the food that New Orleans is associated with, despite the fact they didn't invent hardly any of it. And theirs is just a small sample of it.
Well, considering how many... How do I want to say this? The potpourri that goes into New Orleans. Yeah. I mean, how many different cultures?
Like, exactly.
You know, like Pensacola, speaking of this, of Five Flags. Hello.
Speaking of this, Michelin, just gave out a bunch of awards.
Yes, this is huge. This is
and for New Orleans. They said New Orleans, this is the first Michelin's that any New Orleans restaurant has ever gotten. And
was it a star or just recognition?
It was the that other.
There's Michelin recognized, which means you're so good, we're going to start grading you.
Mm-hmm.
Most restaurants don't ever get even Michelin recognized.
We're not talking tires here. I'm
right. Then there's one star, two star, three star. I hate the expression. It was a five star restaurant, five star hotel. Nobody does that. That's not a rating. Yeah. No one that you would depend on. AAA does diamonds. They'll do stars.
But right.
Michelin this is the one has one that does stars.
This does have a name, and I forget. It looks like a clover, and it's red, and it's got a clover. Emerald and his son got one for emeralds. But Anthony Bourdain has always said that even though he loved Vietnam the most, you know, and in Japan, he says probably the best country in the world for the most best food. Yeah. But he said New Orleans is the best restaurant city in the world.
Yeah.
And the best food
in the
world.
Which is why they're so territorial about the food. But at the same time, the only muffalata in New Orleans that's like Central Groceries is Central Grocery. Yeah. Everybody's is different. They all make their subtle differences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mortadella is one of the common cold cuts that goes in a muffalata.
And I love that stuff, by the way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's it's bologna with chunks of lard and pistachio. What's not to love? But you don't have to make a muffalata with mortadella. It's any Italian cold cuts. It's not a New Orleans sandwich. You learn this sandwich from Italian immigrants. It's not a New Orleans sandwich. It's Italian. It's existed for hundreds of years in Italy. So quit thinking you invented everything. What you did was you perfected a bunch of stuff. But the tomato thing, a lot of the reasons that they didn't eat it was they were Europeans. Tomato is part of the nightshade family, which is a very dangerous, toxic plant.
Mm-hmm.
When Columbus brought tomatoes back to Europe, it was 200 or 300 years before anyone had the guts to eat one. They just thought the plants were beautiful.
Hmm.
And they used them for decoration. They were afraid to eat the tomatoes off of them because it's a nightshade. They're toxic.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn something new every week, just like Mike says. The Michelin Guides rating system is what you were talking about.
Yeah, we need to get to this quick because Noble South here in Mobile just became a Michelin-recognized restaurant.
Yes.
First one in Mobile history. One of only a handful in the state of Alabama.
Great restaurant, by the way.
Yeah, great restaurant. That's the whole reason we brought it. So I want to make sure I got that in.
Gotcha.
That.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Creole gumbo is the one with tomatoes.
Yeah.
Creole gumbo.
The difference between jambalaya and Creole, shrimp Creole, or Creole jambalaya, is tomatoes.
Hmm. Is that a paste or is it
it's a city thing? No, usually just diced.
Boiled tomatoes. Okay.
I don't have a problem with tomatoes in my gumbo.
Yeah.
You don't taste it. Yeah. You don't taste the tomatoes.
There's no bite to it.
And if you do a roux, you do your roux right, like I did mine, very, very dark, you don't see the tomatoes anyway.
Okay. Well, now we know.
There you go. Folks, get out there, support local, be local, buy local. Tip your servers well.
You know it's a good tip, don't you?
What's that?
Provolone.
Give him some provolone there. That's right.
Warm rolling sea and all my dreams. Somewhere I'd lost them. Mobile Bay, Magnolia Leaf.